We don't treat ourselves. Oh, we do treat ourselves with a meal out.
The Amex Platinum Card. With £300 global dining credit every year, you can eat at the restaurants you've always wanted to try. Representative 704.6% APR variable. Selected restaurants only. Annual fee. Terms apply. 18 plus. Subject to approval.
We don't treat ourselves. Oh, we do treat ourselves with a meal out.
The Amex Platinum Card. With £300 global dining credit every year, you can eat at the restaurants you've always wanted to try. Representative 704.6% APR variable. Selected restaurants only. Annual fee. Terms apply. 18 plus. Subject to approval.
This is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Understanding that your blackness is part of your greatness.
Blackness just comes from being me, and that's it.
Men are allowed to do whatever the fuck they want to do. They can be cheaters, they can be liars, but women are expected to be righteous.
So if you're someone who, in a concert, you're going to say the N-word, in my opinion, at home you're going to say it as well. In friendship, there's someone who deposits and there's someone who withdraws. You don't want to be the friend that's keep depositing and the person that keeps withdrawing.
Poor people don't have time for depression.
I'm so tired.
Banning abortions doesn't actually reduce abortion.
But actually, if my mental health is not okay, I can't help you in any capacity.
I mean, my entire life, I've lived under the gaze of my parents. Fuck that shit.
Hey.
Hi, guys. Welcome to another episode of The Dig Deep. I'm laughing because I was going to say The Dig Deep episode. And it's like, that's not the name of the podcast. But yeah, guys, welcome back to another episode. This is actually one of my favorite things to do during the week when we have these episodes, because I really like the intimacy that me and Leanne have in these moments, all these episodes that we share with you guys. So if you're new to it, the Dig Deep episode is basically where we take you guys on a journey into our sisterhood, where we ask each other a series of questions. But yeah, how have you been, Leanne?
Good. I'm looking at my face in this camera and like realizing I need to start putting on makeup when we do these recordings, because the discoloration is not cute at all. Like, I'm going through the skincare regime and my skin is on its way there. But clearly in the meantime, I need to, because, you know, I'm not a makeup girl by nature. But yeah,
I feel like we're both not, which is why we both show up with no makeup. And that's fine, because who's going to represent for the girls that are like us?
Mm-hmm. This is very true. But your face looks clean and good. I like it looks smooth and it looks good. So
no, it must be the good camera behind.
The other thing I was going to say to you is I saw on your Snapchat a picture of your baby brother, who's not such a baby anymore, and he looks exactly like your mom.
They're the same person.
They are literally the same person.
Because it's a boy, you'd be like, oh, it's the same person with a shaved head, but my mom's head is shaved. So they're literally the exact same person. They're twins.
But it's not like your mom looks more masculine than your brother looks more feminine. Like, they both look like literally the male and female version of each other.
It's scary. It's crazy. Because he also looks just like my uncle, so my mom's brother. But my uncle doesn't look like my mom. Like, I wouldn't think my uncle looks like my mom. But my uncle and my brother look exactly alike. And my brother and my mom are twins. It's insane, honestly.
It's crazy. I just saw a mini version of Auntie in a school uniform. It blew my mind.
No, it blows my mind. Watching kids grow up is like the most fascinating thing ever.
Because he's transitioning into big school, right?
So he's in big school now. He's in year 7.
Okay. Oh, they grow up so quickly.
When my mum was pregnant with him, I remember thinking like, wow, I'm going to have such a big age gap with my younger sibling. But I actually really love it now. Like, I feel like it's because I've got such different gaps with all of my siblings, I feel like I have completely different relationships with them all. So none of them feel like there's an overlap or that there's favoritism, because they're all completely unique.
Do you feel like you have a more of a mother-daughter, mother-son relationship with the younger ones than you do your brother that's closer to you in age?
Definitely. But if you was to ask him what it was like growing up with me, he'll definitely say that I tried to be his mum. Because I remember one day he said to me, like, you know, you're not my mum, you're my sister. And it made me G-check myself and be like, okay, there's something that I need to take from this.
Yeah.
But I think it's because we're so close in age that we're not. So we've got a 6-year age gap. When he's 14 and I'm 20, and I've always been quite mature for my age, he's also finding himself and what he's going to be like as an adult. So when I'm telling him off, yeah, telling him certain things, it was an awkward position because he's thinking, like, bruv, you're 20 years old. Who are you talking to? And I'm thinking, you're a little 14-year-old boy. Who are you talking to? So I feel like we went through a weird patch where we were trying to figure out what our relationship is like. Now you said that, I'm going to ask him after this call how he feels about it. Because I still think he comes to me for a lot of things that you could say arguably is what you'd go to your big sister for, but also as things that you might go to a parent for. So I think maybe now he appreciates it in a different way. But I think when he was younger, he didn't really, he wasn't on it. He was like, what? What is going on?
At that age, though, you want to be rebellious to anybody that's telling you what to do. You know what I mean? Much less your big sister, who's not that much older than you. Like, my sister couldn't tell me shit when I was 14, 15. But now I go to her for advice all the time. In a way that I probably would my mom if she was around.
You've got three siblings, yeah? You're one of three.
Yes. I'm the last. I'm the baby.
So how do you think you being the last child shapes who you are?
Oh, that's a good question, actually. Someone else brought this up recently. I can't remember what context it was. I mean, I think because I was the last one, my parents kind of were a lot more lenient. Like, I grew up in a very, very strict household. We had a curfew. I wasn't allowed to sleep over at anybody's house. I didn't pierce my ears until I was like 18. Very strict. But by the time many of the things that I did, I was able to get away with because my parents were older. They had already had two kids. They were kind of like tired, like just let this one, you know, run with her own devices.
If one out of three is bad, it's all right. We still did a good job.
And also, but in doing that, it made me much more, in allowing me to be more rebellious, I think it's made me much more open to taking risks and, you know, going to different countries and being a little bit more fearless, I think. I think when I compare my behavior to my older sister, she makes choices that are a lot safer. She's very anti-risk, like she's risk averse. And I will kind of throw caution to the wind a little bit more than she will. And my brother's in the middle and he's kind of very measured in his decisions. He's not risk averse, but he thinks through everything a lot more than I would. Like, I'm probably a lot more spontaneous.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that is true of you as the eldest sibling?
Yeah, definitely how you're describing your sister. Mm-hmm. But I do think I take risks, but I think I take... I take risks, but risk in a different way. So risk when it comes to like life, like, you know, you talk about both about finances or when you spoke about like dating or moving house, like those sort of things, I don't really take risks. I take that quite seriously. But then risk like, oh, let me hitch a car ride. You know, that's a risk. I was doing that for some time. So I feel like it kind of depends on the situation and the environment. But I do think for the most part, I don't really take risks. I play it safe. I feel like I have a good balance of the both. Okay. I think it depends on the situation and what it is. But I do think that I was reflecting on me being the older child the other day, and I was saying a lot of who I am and everything that I am that I stand for kind of stems from being the older child, especially when you're the older child in an environment where there's a single parent household because you have to mature, you have to step up. Do you get what I mean? So like you mentioned before that you think I'm quite like motherly to some people. Well, in a way, I kind of had to parent my brother for some years. So I would have had to take on that role when I was younger. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, you definitely grew up in an environment where you were, it was almost not put upon you, because I don't think your mom had that expectation necessarily, or maybe she did, but that it just felt like a natural fit because you were so much older by the time the kids were already born.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't put on me to do that. My mom definitely... Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we even talk about it now, like, certain things, she'll be like, oh, you know, we were talking about the fact that I used to get my brother from school after school club, and she was saying, like, oh, what time would I come home, or what would I do this, and I'm like, mom, like, chill, you was a good mom. I wasn't coming home, and I'm not saying this makes anyone a bad mom, but I was just trying to let her understand, like, me picking up my brother from school, because you're working at 6 and we're going to get home at the same time, is really not that deep.
Yeah.
Because the school was right near my school. I literally just crossed the road and walked across. It wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
I don't know why she's blanked this out, actually. But she was like, oh, so how would you eat? And I was like, you'd make dinner. Like, you'd just come home. We'd literally be home by ourselves for maybe half an hour at most. And you'd make dinner. Or it would be one of them ones where you're like, take the meat out of the freezer.
Yeah.
And you would go and get him yourself. It depended much on the day.
Yeah.
So I think even if I had a two-parent household my whole life, I probably still would have had quite similar personality to what I have now, because she's such a nurturing person in general, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It's crazy to me that I haven't met her yet, and I feel like that needs to change very soon.
You have?
Have I?
Yeah, but it wasn't on an intimate basis. You met at the Christmas dinner.
But like, no, like proper sit down and have dinner, like hang out. I'm going to come on holiday with you guys.
Yeah, you're going to have to meet us in Antigua.
Yeah. All right. If you could go back to the first time we met, what would you tell me about our relationship?
I don't think I was aware of it at the time, but in hindsight, I know this definitely was the case. I think I was quite apprehensive about what was to come, because we kind of was like put together to start this. I didn't really think I even understood how big this was going to end up being or what we was actually doing. And it was in a time in my life where a lot of things wasn't really settled either. So I lent on you a lot for everything in terms of like the work that we've done together. But I think because I've always maybe questioned people, I didn't really know where our friendship was going to end up.
Or even if we were going to have one.
Especially not like this. Cool, blimey, I lucked out. Gosh. So I feel like I would say, like, I would say to myself, you know, just to let you know, this friendship's going to be magical. You're going to have a great time, but you're going to be forced to fucking grow. Strap yourself in and prepare for the ride, because it's going to be a long one. Because I feel like our friendship is just all about growth, like, in every aspect, like, on a personal level, together, on a professional level. Like, it's just growth, 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 growth. And I feel like I fast-tracked my growth, and it probably helps because of the age range that I met you. I met you pre-25. I'm now over 25. So that's naturally going to be a huge growth for anybody. And then because we've got an age gap, I then learn from you as well. Do you get what I mean? So I feel like that's what I would tell myself. Just to reassure myself, like, you don't have to worry about this person. You're actually good.
And 4 years later, we're still here.
Still here, baby. Do you know, I actually was thinking about the fact that it was 4 years, literally maybe like 2 days ago. And I was like, it doesn't feel like that.
It's weird. Some days when I think about the fact that it's 4 years, it feels like, God, we feel like we've been doing this forever, because obviously we've grown so close in such a short period of time. But then at the same time, I'm like, gosh, it's 4 years already, because I feel like we've done so much in such a short time and we still have so much more to do.
That makes sense. I was talking to someone the other day, and I always say, like, I've got 5 really close friends, or 5 best friends, I always say, and you're obviously one of them. And I was like, yeah, I've known them all over 10 years. And I was like, oh, that's a lie. I thought I was going through. I was like, no, I've actually known Leanne for less than 5.
No, you are my newest, closest friend as well, I would say. Because everyone else I've known for at least a decade or way longer. Yeah. But it's also weird because you fit right in with my long-standing friends. Mm-hmm. Like whenever you hang out with Kemi or... I don't think you've hung out with Daniel. Oh, you have hung out with Daniel, but not properly. But like the girlfriends that you would have helped to coordinate my bachelorette with and that kind of thing. Like we all kind of just gel, which I think is also a testament to the work that we do in general. Yeah. Because there's this narrative, obviously, that Black women don't get along and they're very cliquish and all that kind of stuff. And I've always had real anxiety about bringing different groups of girlfriends together. And I don't have that anymore because I just know that everybody's just going to get along because we're all good peoples.
But it's also a testament to your discernment as well, because you don't have to question it anymore because you trust the decisions that you've made.
I don't know, you've given me food for thought about my character judgment recently based on other episodes.
that one's an anomaly. You're doing a scientific experiment and we're going to come back to that in a year's time and see what the result was.
Where we are. Okay. All right. Your turn.
What do you think I'm learning from you?
Goodness. I think, and maybe I don't know if I've said this to you before, but I think over the time that we have been doing this work and just known each other, there has been like this exponential growth. And I don't want to attribute it to me specifically. Like, I don't think you've learned this from me. But I think you've learned it in relation to our interaction. And there's this like growth in terms of leadership and ownership of your professional domain. Like, you know exactly what you're doing, how to do it well. And I feel like there's a confidence in that. And I've seen that develop over time. So I don't think that's something that you've learned from me, because I think we all suffer from imposter syndrome, myself included. But I've seen a direct shift. And I think that's because of the fact that we have engaged or embarked upon this journey of, you know, creating sisterhoods and safe spaces together.
Yeah.
I think that's naturally become a part of your growth in that.
I agree with that.
Yeah. But I can't say that there's anything you've learned specifically from me. I think there you've reacted to some of the things maybe you've seen me do, but I would say a lot of it is very much rooted in just us being on this journey together and the responsibilities that we've taken on and how much we've been able to have this work overlap with our professional work.
Mm-hmm. I can't think of a standout thing that I've learned. Being close to you has like amplified skill sets or things that I've had that wasn't amplified before.
Yeah.
And I guess a lot of that is to do with the work we do as well. But I feel like before I met you, something that I struggled with that I wasn't hyper aware of was the idea of being multifaceted and being Black. I kind of felt like I had to fit into like one box or like one mold. And I knew I didn't fit into it, so I didn't try to. I just felt like I was odd or different. And then I met you, and you was this multifaceted person that just seemed to be doing it and handling it really well. So then it actually made me step out more into my multifaceted self and embrace all of that without holding back or like feeling like I've got to shrink one version of myself when I'm around different people.
Yeah. And I think we just meet women, so many women along the way that are like that, right? Like, I can think of at least 10 women who do 10 different things now. Just like how we do 10 different things or we do 5 different things or whatever. And it's just so interesting to see Black women coming into their own and being comfortable in their own skin. I think it's one of the best things I get to see. Okay, my turn. What do you think is the source of my joy? That's an interesting question. I don't think I even know the answer to that.
What do I think is the source of your joy? What do I think makes Leanne happy?
Nothing. I'm consistently miserable.
So I had an answer that came to my head, but I don't know if I'm happy with the answer.
Okay, tell me what the answer was.
Because the source sounds like one thing, and I feel like there could be many.
For sure.
So I definitely think you find a lot of joy in serving others, like in helping others. Okay, that's true. Like, I remember talking to my mum about, I don't know if I spoke to you about this, but I was talking to my mum about coming to Jamaica for the wedding and staying. Yeah. And I was saying to her, I might stay longer for Christmas. My mum was like, so what would you do for Christmas? I was like, I don't know, like, might go to a restaurant, might go to see Leanne. And she goes, go and see Leanne. She's going to be newly married.
By the way, we are definitely having Christmas dinner here. Like, newly married or not. Yeah.
My mum was basically saying, like, why does she want you there? She's going to be newly married. It's her first wedding her first Christmas being married. And I said, you know, mum, I do hear your point. But I also feel like, Leanne just likes to take people in. She likes to nurture. She likes to host. So I feel like it's a 50-50 split. It's not as black and white as that. Do you know what I mean? So I feel like, I feel like you, when I see you like hosting or having people around, that's one of the moments where I've seen you really, really happy. And I know like through the work that you do, which outside of the work we do together, is served in, or the root is in helping others.
Yeah.
And I know how much that joy brings you as well. So I feel like that's like the blanket statement for it.
100%. I do love my job. And it's funny because there are a couple of other people from the UK that are staying through Christmas. And I was just talking to one of them. And I was like, what are you going to do on Christmas Day? And they're like, coming to your house for dinner. It's like, okay, cool. Like, it wasn't even a question.
But do you get what I mean? Like, it's not everyone you could do that with. I'm not someone you could make me do that with, you know? I'm probably not. But what would you say is your source of joy, though?
I would say the same thing, to be honest. Like, it's true. And I would say even more specific than serving people, it's feeding people. Like, I genuinely enjoy getting people together for dinner and feeding them, and whether it's playing games or watching a movie, or and that's like a huge part of how we hang out together as well, right? Mm-hmm. It's food and some other activity or a barbecue or something of the like. So it's funny, I remember when I lived in Birmingham, I had the tiniest apartment out of our entire group of friends. Like, I lived in a one bedroom open plan kitchen, super tiny, similar to the tiny apartment that I lived in up until I moved to Jamaica, actually. And even though I had the smallest apartment, people still came to my house for Sunday dinner, and we would all like sit down together on the floor, no blankets, no carpet, no nothing. Well, we had carpet, but no, like, you know, bedding or mm-hmm. seating of any kind. And we just have dinner. And meanwhile, others had full-blown dining tables, and we never went there for dinner. Not never, but rarely. I think it does bring me genuine, genuine joy to feed people.
Not you being a feeder.
Yeah, but not a cleaner. So everybody needs to wash their dishes right after. Like, I am not, or we need the dishwasher. So just know that if you come for Christmas Day, you might have to wash some dishes.
I actually like washing up, and I don't like using a dishwasher.
You know what's funny is I remember, I don't know if it was the first time you ever came to the house when we first started hanging out, but you came over one day, and I think Kemi and I left you at the house because we went to go somewhere and you were going to leave later on. But by the time we came back, the kitchen was spotless. Like, you had literally cleaned the kitchen from top to bottom, washed all of the dishes. I was like, this girl came and cleaned our entire house.
I really, really love cleaning. I find it so therapeutic. No, I love washing up. I love it.
Oh, if my partner could hear, you know, he might try to marry you instead of me.
Don't kill me.
He would love it if I cleaned more. Let me put it that way.
This is the Unapologetically Black Podcast.
Hey, everyone. Sorry to interrupt, but we just wanted to say, if you're enjoying this podcast, we'd really appreciate it if you hit the subscribe button.
Unapologetically Black.
So, if I was in your shoes, what do you think I'd find the most challenging?
My partner, for sure.
Why?
Barry is his name for the podcast. So, Barry is... he says whatever comes to mind, like, completely unfiltered, which also makes him obnoxiously rude. He says things in a way that are, like, I remember, I don't know if I told you this already, when he was listening to the podcast, or maybe he was listening to us talk, and he was like, Shan has great throat. Which I know what he meant, but obviously the way in which he said it was... slightly obnoxious. What he actually meant, for people who are listening, is he meant she has a great voice for radio.
Right.
Is what he
meant. Mm-hmm.
He is very charming when he's ready, very smart, but also just incredibly obnoxious, and is someone who consistently complains all the time and politically has views that are very, very different from both of us. So he's super conservative, or just left of conservative, and or just, yeah. And I'm much more liberal, as are you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can be trying sometimes.
The complaining would definitely get on my nerves.
Mm-hmm. You live, more specifically, even more than I do, and this is something I work at, but this is something that you actively do. You live in a space of gratitude. Like, you're consistently thinking through how grateful and you are or should be for things. And he's just getting into that now. Like, we've just started recently. Actually, the first time we did it was yesterday. Is at the end of every day, we sit down and we talk and we say three things that we're grateful for.
Oh, that's cute.
So it's a work in progress, but yeah.
Yeah, that's so cute.
Our little date time.
I feel like when you do little things like that, it'll help it to become part of someone's natural orbit. And then on days when mm-hmm. you need to remember to be grateful and to hold gratitude, he'll be able to hold you to account. Whether or not he keeps it up or not, he will be able to remind you of, like, why that being important to you and why you should do it. I've got friends, for example,
yeah.
who maybe don't believe in God, let's say. But with what I'm going through at the moment, they've been like, oh, have you been praying? Have you been watching sermons? Have you been listening to gospel music? Because you know it serves you. And I feel like sometimes,
yeah.
even if someone sees things or experiences things from an environment or a lens that's very much the opposite of yours, if they see how much it benefits you, they will also be able to take that on board to like to implement and support you through whatever that needs have to take place. Do you get what I mean?
100%. It's funny, we did this Catholic, because Barry's Catholic, I'm not. We did this premarital Catholic course.
How did that go?
It was very interesting. Mm-hmm. I'll give you a breakdown of it. But we met another couple, because it's like a group of six couples.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, she knows that her partner is very disorganized. Or no, other way around. He knows that his partner is very disorganized. And so he starts sending her like reminders to her calendar, and she still doesn't check it. But what he does know is at 11:30 every day, he sends her a reminder to her calendar to say, I love you. And so now she looks forward to checking her calendar at 11:30 every day. So now she's in the habit of checking her calendar every day.
That's really cute.
And so now she's becoming more organized. So it's just an example of how coming and living within a positive space and that kind of positive reinforcement really does help to build good habits.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. Can someone just put in my calendar how they love me?
Mm-hmm.
Just a random day. I don't mind which day of the week. Just tell me you love me.
I'm sure there are millions of people who can do that for you.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, is it my turn? When do you feel most alive? That's a good question.
I think I feel most alive when I feel most free, and I feel most free when I'm in the sea. So when I'm in like water, I just feel so free. Even if it means like, let's say I've been feeling really, really, and by water, by the way, people listening, I'm definitely Caribbean. I mean the sea in the Caribbean, not the River Thames.
Mm-hmm.
Not your local leisure center. Mm-hmm. I mean the sea in the Caribbean only. So if I'm in the sea, beautiful blue sea in the Caribbean, swimming, even if I feel low or I feel sad, I still feel really connected with myself, and I feel like I can really feel the emotions of whatever I'm feeling in a heightened way when I'm in the sea.
Yeah.
And I think that sounds so ridiculous, even saying that outside of my head, but I feel like when I'm in the sea or when I'm in water, everything that I feel in myself is heightened and it just feels more amplified, which then just reinforces the fact that I am genuinely alive. Like I'm breathing, I'm feeling emotions, because sometimes you can go through certain things and it makes you feel numb, which is the opposite of feeling alive. But I feel like when I'm in the sea, I feel it all. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
Even the fact that sometimes you get tired and you have to just try to doggy paddle your way back. Like, this is life or death, baby.
It's so funny that you say that, because a couple of weeks ago, I was feeling so out of it. I was feeling super rough. And normally, you know, my professional, my day-to-day job, 9 to 5, is a 4-day work week. So I usually take Wednesdays off, but inevitably I end up working on Wednesdays for one reason or another. But this Wednesday I was like, I'm not answering anybody's phone calls. I'm not going to be available. And I just got up and drove to the beach, like an hour and a half to my favorite beach. And I just spent the day there. I swam, I read, I fell asleep. And it's not even so much, I know so many people that say, oh, you know, the sea or the ocean reminds them that they're part of something bigger. For me, it's literally just the sound, like the sound of waves crashing or the sound of water moving brings me this, like, it's almost like I'm able to meditate or focus a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
It immediately puts my body at ease. Being in the water is just such a relaxing feeling. There's nothing better than taking a nap at the beach, by the way, as long as you feel safe.
I was going to say, I absolutely do not do that.
I do all the time. And I don't know if it's the safest thing to do. But yeah, I legit, if I'm tired enough, will fall asleep at the beach anytime.
Yeah, I think the sea is really interesting. And I actually think if anyone's listening and they have anxiety or trouble sleeping, then if you go on Spotify and type in water sounds, you can find a playlist that's like hours and hours long. Put it on and then just you end up falling asleep to it, because it just calms you down. Especially if you have like anxiety or like panic attacks, just focusing on that sound and that music helps to like ground you in that moment and make you feel like you're in a different place.
That's a good idea, actually, because Barry's an insomniac. I'm gonna try and do that. I've never thought about doing it for someone else who can't sleep, even though I've done it for myself.
Do you know what works as well for people that can't sleep? It's having a diffuser, like an oil diffuser.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And having like, I've actually got it here, like eucalyptus oil. I'm putting it in there. Eucalyptus oil I normally use when I'm feeling sick, but lavender oil is really, really good. and putting that in the oil diffuser, because then the whole room smells like it. But then if you don't want to like done out the electricity, you could just get a lavender spray and just spray it on the bed. I feel like people underestimate how much tapping into each of our five senses helps to actually regulate our emotions and our body.
Very true. Very, very true.
Yeah. This is an interesting question. What is a value we do not share in common?
Oh, that's a good question. Being fiscally conscious.
Who?
Like financially, you're much more financially conscious than me.
What was the word you used? Please teach me, dictionary. Fiscally.
Anything that is financial is also fiscal. Mm-hmm. Let me put it that way. I don't know if that's a value, but like, yeah, I think you're much more grounded as it relates to money than I am, for sure. I mean, we've talked about this before, I'm sure.
I was talking to my mom about borrowing another relative money. And when I told her how much it was, she was like, oh, okay. And then she was like, huh? You borrowed how much? I was like, yeah, X amount. And she goes, you just had that sitting in your account. And I was thinking, because I'm always like, I have no money.
It's like, exactly, it's really, you do it all the time.
Part of my brand. But I'm saying to her, like, this money I will never touch. It's the emergency fund. It's actually for an emergency. But because this person, you know, I knew that really needed the money, I dipped into it to give it to them.
But you know, that doesn't mean that you don't have any money. It means that you don't have any money to spend.
Because in my head, I'm trying to hit a goal for that emergency goal. And then once I've hit that, then I'll hit a savings goal. And once I hit the savings goal, then I'll feel fine. Because then I feel like my money's mine. But that might be 2 years from now. So let's hope I'm, you know, fighting the fight still so that I'm able to enjoy.
I have to say, that's one thing that I have learned from you. Like, no, I literally have just stopped dipping into my savings altogether. I used to do it every now and again, like if I really needed something. But now if I'm like, if I don't have it here in front of me with my paycheck, et cetera, I'm not getting it. So,
did I ever send you my financial budget spreadsheet thing?
No, but please do.
I'll send it to you. I've sent it to a lot of my friends. And I think that makes it easier to then be kinder with yourself when it comes to money. Because I feel like sometimes I tap into a very extreme version of like not spending, not doing this, not doing that. And it can be to your detriment. And I actually think we can learn from each other. Whereas the spreadsheet is like, this is how much I earn. This is what's coming out. You put all the things in and it's automated. And then you can just look at it in a more logistical way. Like, oh, I have this much money left over. Let me keep that for myself then. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
My living cost is like probably half of what I save a month.
Okay. Yeah. Got you. So you could easily start spending on yourself a little bit more.
Yeah.
And still have more than enough saved.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I could easily just pocket a lot of the money that I spend and replenish the savings. Okay. This is my last question, which is, what is your greatest fear about getting older?
Ending up old and alone to my detriment of my standards. That's what I would say. So I feel like when I think about people who are old and by themselves, and it's not because like someone's passed away, but it's because they just didn't marry, didn't have kids, or like those sort of things. But I mean, as in they want to be with someone. I end up being that person. I want it to be because I want to live a happy life and feel confident in decisions that I made, know that I took risks with people, took gambles, and enjoyed love and experienced dating. I don't want it to be because I was just too much like, this person's like that, so no.
Do you know what's funny is I've spoken to two older women recently. This is before I left the UK. One is actually Barry's aunt, who has never been married, to my knowledge, has never really had a partner, like not a long-term partner. And she's one of the happiest people that I know. She chills with her dog. She hangs out. She goes on holiday by herself all the time. She has a shit ton of money because she doesn't have any like dependents or any, you know, anybody to spend on. And she is literally one of the happiest people that I know. And I always think, gosh, like maybe there is a space where you can be, and I say this as I'm about to get married, but maybe there is a space in which you know, people always talk about the importance of companionship, which I genuinely believe in. But I think there are exceptions to the rule, or I think there are other pathways to joy that people can find.
And I also don't think companionship has to always be romantic. I just think when people talk about it in that context, people focus on romantic love. Whereas I think a companionship can come from family members or friends. And because I'm so close to my family and my friends, I feel like I definitely have it there. But I mean it more in terms of like getting to an age and being unhappy with, like the example you gave to Sen, she was happy and she's thriving. So this wouldn't be a thought process that she might be having currently. Yeah. But I mean like getting to an age like 70, being alone at Christmas by myself and being like, well, I put myself here because I didn't want to settle when I was 45.
Yeah. So the other person that the other woman that I spoke to who is divorced, you know, I was talking to her and I was like, oh, you know, I'm getting married, that's why I'm going to Jamaica, et cetera, et cetera. She was just like, you know, asking me about him. And I think at the time I was probably vexed with Barry at the time. So I didn't paint him in the greatest light, which, you know, I have a tendency to do. She was like, you better hold on to that man because you can go on and pick and pick and pick until you pick shit and then you end up alone and you just go end up miserable. And take it from me because, you know, I'm alone now and I wish I had just held on to the man that I did have. And not to say that it was settling, but I think sometimes as empowered women, let me put it that way, not to say that we should settle, but I think sometimes we have very unrealistic expectations. And I'm not talking about struggle love. I'm not telling you to date a man that's broke. I'm not telling you to date a man that treats you like crap. But I don't know if you've seen that video. I'm sure you have. The video where the guy's being interviewed and he's talking about taking a woman on a date and he didn't have the £200 or something like that.
Yeah, it was Harry Pinero and he called his friends.
Mm-hmm. And so many people, men and women, were like, that's bait. Oh, yeah, you don't have $200 in your bank account or £200 in your bank account. What are you doing on a date with the girl? Which, in principle, I agree with. However, if he were in a relationship and he had been going out with her for months, I wouldn't expect him to be spending £200 or £300 on a date every single week. Not when you have a mortgage to pay or multiple mortgages to pay, or maybe you have children to feed or a child in university. So it's all relative.
He was probably dating someone that was beyond his tax bracket. Obviously you're getting married now, but let's just go back a few years. When you're dating someone, you know, when you date a guy, the type of money the guy has based on how he presents himself. Yeah, so if he says doing a go on a date, you'll probably know some guys you can expect to go to a nice date where you might have to dress up, might wear a little heel. You might even buy a new lipstick because, you know, it's an investment. And other dates, you know, you're probably going to be in trainers and doing, you know, a bowling, eat and bowl deal for £20. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know the type of person that you're meeting. So for me, it's like, the reason why with that video, I thought it was funny. Maybe it goes back to you saying, you know, I'm a very fiscal person. Is that how you say the sentence? Maybe it goes back to that. Because for me, if I was him, I would have looked for somewhere that has 2-for-1 on cocktails. If I know this is a babe that likes to have her drink and live lavish, I'd go for somewhere that's 2-for-1 on cocktails. You get a little pre-ordered package and do that. I'd have my money set, £80.
That's smart, because you know exactly what you're spending. Yeah,
like right now, Enamo, if anyone's listening, I don't get sponsored by them, but on Virgin Experience, they're doing, like, I think it's like £99 for two people to go to Enamo, get unlimited Asian buffet and unlimited free-flowing drinks. If you did that, she wouldn't be able to take you out of your price bracket because the drinks are free-flowing. So I feel like sometimes people have to think more creatively when it comes to dating and giving someone that experience. Because I feel like this is a story for another day. But I've been on a few dates this year and I just feel like they were very out of order. Okay, very rude.
It's so funny. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need to do a first date episode for sure.
Yeah, no, because some of the dates I went on this year, I just said, let me stop dating. Please, let me take myself out because I'm not just getting dressed up, making sure my hair is done, my nails is done for this experience.
Yeah. I want to say that I remember there was a guy that you went out on a date with that showed up in a pair of like shorts and slippers. Like.
Oh my gosh, that was not this year.
No, it wasn't, but I remember it well.
And I was walking down the road and I was actually embarrassed to be with him. And the worst thing is the area we was in was the area of the guy that I'd spoken to previously, literally his doorstep. And I was thinking, if I see this guy now, what am I going to do? I'm going to have to do a backflip or something to just make him just think that I'm mad because I look mad with this person next to me. No.
Hilarious.
It's crazy. Okay. So my last question for you is, if there's one thing I still don't understand about you, what is it?
Beyond the fact that you know me extremely well, I think I'm a relatively open book. Like, if I was going to say maybe my sex life and maybe my sexual preferences, but I feel like we've probably discussed that too. Like, I feel like you know exactly what I like in the bedroom. Even though we're clearly not romantic partners, because we've discussed, mm-hmm. and through podcasting, through the work that we do, like, we discuss a lot. I mean, that's kind of the point of these episodes, right? And I feel like so far, even with the Dig Deep episodes that we've been asking questions of each other about, we're pretty spot on with most of the answers, like, outside of knowing yeah. specific instances, but in principle, moral values, et cetera, et cetera. Even thinking down to what I would do or might do in a situation, I think you already kind of know.
We talk too much.
I think you know when I dig my head in the sand. I think you know when I'm overwhelmed. I think you know when I'm excited about something. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I genuinely can't think of it. All right, folks. See you next week. We'll be back. Thank you so much for listening to the Unapologetically Black podcast, brought to you by the Dope Black Women CIC.
If you like this episode, please tweet us, DM us, or even message us at Dope Black Women across all socials.
Unapologetically Black.
We don't treat ourselves. Oh, we do treat ourselves with a meal out.
The Amex Platinum Card, with £300 global dining credit every year, you can eat at the restaurants you've always wanted to try. Representative 704.6% APR variable. Selected restaurants only. Annual fee. Terms apply. 18 plus. Subject to approval.
We don't treat ourselves. Oh, we do treat ourselves with a meal out.
The Amex Platinum Card, with £300 global dining credit every year, you can eat at the restaurants you've always wanted to try. Representative 704.6% APR variable. Selected restaurants only. Annual fee. Terms apply. 18 plus. Subject to approval.
The cost of living crisis is making it harder for families across the world to put food on the table. But in Bangladesh, women farmers are leading the change, and they need your support. Donating £36 to ActionAid could provide climate-resilient seeds for 10 women, ensuring their communities have enough to eat. This Christmas, will you help women grow a future without hunger? Text ACTION to 70020 to give £36. ActionAid. Changing the world with women and girls. Texts cost £36 plus your standard network rate. By texting ACTION to 70020, you are agreeing to calls and texts from ActionAid for marketing purposes. To donate and opt out, text ACTION NO.